This episode is brought to you by Libsyn. Planning to start a podcast? Look no further than Libsyn. Libsyn is one of the biggest feature-rich podcast hosting platforms in the world. Libsyn is IAB certified, offers many hosting plans, and you can start for as low as $5 a month. Aspiring podcasters who listen to the show radio can get 1 month free by using the promo code TSR. Use promo code TSR at checkout to get 1 month free. What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the show. This is episode 589 of the show. I'm your host, Andrew.
And I'm Danny.
And this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news. Head over to theshowradio.info. Once again, that's theshowradio.info. And check out our past shows while you're there. Subscribe and tell a friend about the show. The show is on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the places that you can find podcasts. We are there. And welcome and thank you for listening. It definitely means a lot to us. So 589, Daniela, how are you feeling today?
Pretty good. Amazing for, you know, a Monday and...
Yeah, you sound bright. You sound bright. What's going on in your life? What's happening?
I don't know. Had a good cry yesterday.
Okay.
And then I don't know. I honestly I don't know. If maybe I just got a good night's rest.
Yeah.
Feel like it though.
Nah, you sound dope. You sound dope. I think this show is really kind of like a looking back of the stuff that we saw for E3. And then I know that there's a segment that you're going to do, the indie section. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a weird place. I definitely want to hear your thoughts on this. It's like, I'm excited that things took place, but I feel like it wasn't as impactful because it wasn't in person. Like, how are you feeling about the whole E3 after effect, if you will?
Yeah, I have to agree. It's not, I don't know. Like, I liked what I saw. I enjoyed it. But like, having Facebook or Instagram show me memories about like, hey, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 4 years ago. And I'm like, it's just E3 pictures with, you know, the showroom floor, with friends. And I was just like, I don't have those long lasting memories. I mean, the announcements were cool and I liked it and it was fun, but it wasn't the same type of fun. It's kind of like, okay. And I just watched it and there you go. Whereas I think the other half of the experience there is not even just doing the interviews in person and running around and getting like 20,000 steps in per day, but it's even just the people. It always is going to be the people like sitting at the JW like after. Like I saw pictures and I'm like, that is one empty bar. And like, oh yeah, I don't know. And it's like you can sit and you can have video calls and talk with people about your reactions about the trailers that you had, but then that energy that you get off of people in person to do that with them, that really ingrains it in you. You know, it's like that permanent memory of like, oh yeah, I can't remember. Like, okay, it's like sitting at the Xbox showcase. And just like I was with Good Game Bro, Godfrey and Paris, and we were sitting there and just that energy in that room and the excitement that they have for Phantasy Star Online, for Cyberpunk, for all of the games that are announced there. It was huge. Like, that is my biggest memory of that E3 that year. And now it's just kind of like, I was in my pajamas. Yeah, that's nice. But those moments, you just really cherish them.
Yeah.
So yeah,
definitely
okay,
a different vibe.
And I'm appreciative. I know I said that, like, I feel like some of the bigger showcases are a little bit lackluster for me. And it's not to put down the developers and the people who put on this show and all of those things. I fully appreciate and congratulate them for working through this time. A lot of them working remotely, that is still a huge accomplishment that I'm appreciative of. It just, a lot of the games weren't exactly my taste, but you know what I thought was absolutely fantastic is that even though there weren't as many like AAA title announcement world premieres, I think the shining gem through it is definitely all of the indie games that got announced, that got showcased, like Day of the Devs, the indie showcase, the Wholesome Game Showcase. They were fantastic. And I really hope and I really think that a lot of people got to see some indie titles that, you know, if there were like as traditionally a lot of those AAA titles coming through, kind of get stuck in the little cracks and they get missed. And I think this way, this year, a lot of them have caught a lot of people's attention. I absolutely love that. I'll talk about this in my own segment. That really warmed my heart. And I think that was my favorite part, even right now. And like, I'm stoked that people are excited. The announcement they got for Halo, seeing the Battlefield footage. Like, those are all fun and exciting. But for me, it's just indie is an art. That's all I got to say. So I really hope that, you know, this past week where they had the Steam Next Fest and all these demos that people are trying out, I hope people really take that time to see these demos, try them out, and really fall in love with them. That's my big thing. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, it's dope. I miss hanging out. I miss you. I miss the grind, the being tired and going to another interview. I kind of miss, I miss all that. I miss all that. It's not the same traveling and figuring out what Uber we're going to hop into, where we're going to meet later. And do you need to go back and change? No, I'm good. I'm good right now. I just need like a energy bar or something and then go back to the show floor. Like, although we kind of complain about those things, that is part of the experience. That is what makes it memorable. The late nights at the JW and all the conversations and you friends or associates that gets built from that, you know, venue, if you will, all that is part of that experience. And I think things are different now. I think we're sort of siloed, you know, based on our comfort zones and, you know, pandemic stuff and coming out of that. And so now we're like, okay, so, you know, yeah, we still have our friends and people that we know and have talked to on a regular basis, but everything is just, you know, spread out, right? We live on the internet, you know, quote unquote, during this pandemic time as we're trying to come out of that. So yeah, so all that is part of the experience. And yeah, you did mention a couple of things that you're going to hit in your own segment, which I'm excited about to hear. I guess I just want to highlight two of those games we're going to talk about here, but the other games to look forward to, I'll definitely mention. The two that we're going to talk about here is Vocabulantis and Book of Travels. We're going to share our reactions here, and then you're going to do your segment on A Little to the Left, Unpacking, Behind the Frame, Yokai Inn, Soup Pot, Venba, We Are OFK, Kiwi, Door, Don, okay, that's how I'll say that.
Dordogne.
Okay, appreciate that.
Yeah, it's French, and I'm still trying to figure out the correct way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. One Lonely Outpost. So we have that, A Musical Story, and A Wandering Village. So I look forward to hearing your segment on that for sure. But yeah, let's touch on Vocabulantis and A Book of Travels. Your thoughts on those?
Okay, so Vocabulantis was an instant. I didn't know anything about it beforehand. Like a couple of these, I've gotten little like sprinkles, little teasers of it. But Vocabulantis 100% was a surprise to me. So what makes this game so unique, it is that it is all handmade. It is stop motion. gameplay, and it reminded me of a brighter, not maybe not brighter, but a little bit more colorful Little Nightmares, that type of vibe, because it looked great. And the fact that you're creating, it's one thing to create a movie, you know, a movie that is linear, that you know what it's going to do, and you're not having to think about what is the player's reactions or what inputs are going to be putting into. That is stop motion. But to make a whole game, that just blows my mind. And I think that the story itself I found very interesting. So you have these two characters that they are on the verge of saying how they feel, and then it's just taken away from them, and they're put into this world trying to fix the broken world of language. And if they can't, they're going to be stuck in this moment forever, not being able to say how they truly feel. And it's just wow.
Yeah, it looks really beautiful. I was checking out the trailer, and I'm trying to figure out where I am with indie games. I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past, where do I find myself enjoying it more by watching somebody else play it, or do I find myself enjoying the game itself? And I think that indie for me, and I guess let's kind of define it a little bit. I think of one to three team, right? 1 to 3 person team. And sometimes those are usually hand drawn, hand painted. And it's a very, very small team. I don't know if I still consider a 20 person team an indie team, right? Especially with Hellblade and stuff like that, because I know that was a 20 person team based on what they had mentioned. And then from there, then it scales up from there, you know, AA, AAA, or whatever the case might be. So, I really love, is Ori and the Blind Forest indie? Would that be considered an indie project? Yeah.
That would be considered indie.
Right. So I think that if there's a particular criteria that defines that, if it's a 2-team to 5-team or a 2-team to 20-team, super small budget type of project, if that's what we're saying that it is, then okay, cool. I can accept that. And I like the fact that Journey, right? Something like Journey, I think, was absolutely amazing. If that's considered indie, cool. But I think Journey meant so much for so many of us, including myself, in terms of just traveling through that world and just enjoying meeting a random individual speaking a language that is not necessarily understood, right? To some degree. Or I don't know how they garbled those words to make it do what it did, but love the way they, the multiplayer was seamless. You didn't realize you were playing with someone until you started navigating the world. So a game like Journey is fantastic as well. So based on what I'm seeing here with games like Vocabulantis, I really love what I saw in the trailer. I think it's absolutely amazing. And I think that I realize I do appreciate a lot of indies from afar, and sometimes I play them. I think that's been the pattern for me. I usually tend to play, I guess, the double and triple large scale games. And if they involve some kind of friction, some kind of a difficult hurdle, I think those games I tend to enjoy more. If they have some kind of economy, you know, built into them to some degree, I think I lean towards that. If there's a teamwork, rinse and repeat, you know, I enjoy that, right? So I think that I'm pretty predictable with my game picks at this point. But based on what I saw with Vocabulantis, I think that's something I'll probably watch you play. And but it is fantastic.
You wouldn't? You don't like games that like really touch your feelings? Because I feel like that's where this game is going to be.
Yeah, I guess I don't like sharing my feelings. So because of that, that makes it difficult. Like if I'm being honest, Ori and the Blind Forest, I played. That was dope. I'm trying to figure out what was the last indie game that I played that was absolutely amazing. Besides Ori and Journey, everything else has been like either economy based, loot, shooting things, rinse and repeat, team deathmatch, or teamwork, Paladins, more loot, Warframe, even more loot, division, right? So my games have been pretty predictable at this point, and sometimes driving as of late.
Okay.
Right. And I think that, sometimes it's good. I mean, if I'm looking for emotional drama stuff, Halo is probably going to provide that with the story that's coming up in the fall. I'm pretty sure, right? Either a comeback from, the fact that Cortana was deleted and we're probably going to find a way to bring her back, which could scale, Halo's universe for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more games if Cortana comes back, if she's not really deleted or whatever. So there's that. So that emotional drama attached to that 20 year history of playing that particular game, I think that's going to be amazing to see how they're going to play that out. But they know what we want from that. So that's just one example. But yeah, I mean, so I have to look. Streets of Rage, would that be considered indie? Streets of Rage 4, that was dope. I enjoyed that.
I would say it is.
Right? So I think that, I don't think it's so much like if I... that I don't play indie games. I'm just super selective, right? And I think we all are to some degree. I'm super selective of how much of that time I'm going to play. And if I'm bored, I'm just going to stop playing it. Like in mid-stage. If I'm mid-stage and I'm bored, I'm just going to stop playing it. Because if there's no tension and there's no difficulty, there's no tug of war, then it's not going to keep my attention. I know you like the games where you're reading stuff and you're going through that process. I'd rather watch you do that and listen to you do that versus doing it on my own. Yakuza, action, drama, there's different pieces in there, but that's not indie. But that's a dope game as well to pull on heartstrings and things of that, depending on the story that you play for that series. So there's different things. There's different things. And I think that I guess I've decided where I land with the games that I like, right? Turtles is going to be rinse and repeat. I've been talking about that. We didn't see anything about that during E3, but we'll see what happens maybe during Gamescom. Maybe we'll see it drop in July when nobody's really announcing games. Maybe we'll get the arcade game then that pulls us in through August and heads us into the fall before new seasons of Destiny, et cetera, et cetera. So, but yeah.
Okay, so real quick then, Hellblade, have you played that yet?
No.
That's an indie title.
And it's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's also like one of things when Xbox Series X was announced, that was one of their titles that they used in part of it and part of their advertisement for it. Sadly, Hellblade 2 still hasn't come out yet.
Right.
I don't know when it's going to be coming out. But at what point, because I don't know this yet, what an indie studio, because they self-proclaimed as being an indie AAA title.
Hellblade, right?
Yeah, which is Ninja Theory.
Right.
And now they're just like kind of, they were kind of used as one of Xbox's flagship games for the Series X, which is awesome for them. So now... when do you stop being an indie studio and now you're a AAA studio?
Mm.
And then you're considered a AAA game to be amongst, you know, all the other well-known titles.
Right.
I definitely think Hellblade deserves it. But for number two, I don't know if I would consider it an indie title or not.
Yeah, it's...
It's not like you'll make it a bad thing if they are or aren't. Just at that middle ground there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing because a lot of these games are their genres tend to overlap a little bit. And I think we're beginning to accept that more and more at the place of, I just really appreciate the experience I'm going to get. And I'm not necessarily thinking about if it's an indie, non-indie, or whatever. But we know based on things that you've highlighted personally is that if we don't highlight the indie games, who will, right? Unless they're connected or partner with a large platform, they're not necessarily going to get the shine of this game actually exist if nobody's talking about them. If everybody's just talking about the major, big AA, AAA stuff, we'll never get to hear how dope an indie game is. Right. depending on how they're partnered and how they're marketed, which is why I think it's a real good thing that we should continue on a regular basis, because I know you play more of those than I do. So I'm not their target market for the indie stuff, but since you play a lot of them, I think it's great for us to spend time to, you know, put on a docket to talk about it. I think that's absolutely essential.
Yeah, for sure. And like, now that you're bringing that up, so for Vocabulantis, they were originally on Kickstarter. I think they believe they have an Indiegogo as well now too. When they started it up, they didn't have a PR team. So there's like no marketing that they really had, or a whole team set for that. They didn't really have anybody to manage a budget. They just had this idea that would look great. They put together a couple gifts, and that said everything for everybody, just showing off those little things like, this is our idea. This is what we want. Help us fund it. And that's a huge thing about what indies are, is that they don't have those big budgets. And it's a lot of, you know, small teams. You know, even if it's a team of 20, I still think that's a small team compared to, you know, other studios that are out there that are developing games. And they get to put on something and create something that isn't being overshadowed by, you know, a manager, really, to say like, no, this is what the audience wants. This is what we're going to make. This is what's popular. This is where we're going to make all our money. You have these programmers, developers, artists that are like, we want to make a game that we love. Maybe some people will love it. Maybe they won't, but we're doing something that we really care about, and we might not have as big of an audience as some of the AAA titles, but it's something that we're super proud of. And, you know, we get to experiment with. And I think that's what I really love about indie games. And then speaking specifically about Vocabulantis, the fact that they had none of those things, they just put up this Kickstarter with some gift and like details about what they're going after, and people just flock to it to fund them to get this going, is huge, because there's obviously an audience for that. And it starts off mainly as word of mouth, you know, sharing it on a Reddit page, or they started up their Twitter and just putting up a quick little GIF or a video, a short one that really captures people. And I think I'm so stoked that they got funded for this, and it might not be out for a while. And that's perfectly fine with me, considering that this is going with stop motion, video photography, however way the correct term is that for it. It's stop motion. That's a lot.
Because, yeah, it looks really dope.
I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, it looks really dope, for sure. Yeah, so word of mouth is definitely the old school way, and that's still relevant today. So even with marketing PR teams, you know, trying to make sure a game gets promoted properly and all that stuff, if you do a good trailer and people see it and they retweet it and they share it, that still can be, you know, the best way to push something, even now, even if you don't have a PR and marketing team, and we're still seeing that done. If the content is good, people will make sure that we find out about it, which is pretty dope. Next thing we have, Book of Travels. Daniela, what's up with that one?
This one contains a new term that I've not really heard a whole lot. TMORPG, which is this tiny, what is it? I lost it right now. Tiny multi online RPG.
Okay, interesting.
So I thought that was like, that was like, it's if you're going with tiny here, because usually MMO RPG is massive multiplayer online, you know? So you have tiny multiplayer. I'm like, that is a very interesting way to put that.
Indeed.
But this one as well has a very unique and interesting art style to it, in where I think one of the gems about this game is, so you're exploring this massive world, but there's no straight linear path about it. And I think even in MMOs, They have, you know, there's a story that you follow and you go and do that quest and then you do the next quest and you do this quest. Yeah, you can explore this open world and get many side quests, but it's still in a way like there's a path that you follow to the end. This doesn't. It puts its trust into the player to create the story. And to its description, it doesn't really have necessarily an end.
Interesting.
So there's no real beginning and there's no real end to it. And then it's also talking about this. So I guess a tiny part is that you can come across other players that are playing in this world with you, but it's almost few and far between. So that
this reminds me of Journey, but go ahead.
Yeah, when you actually get to meet these players, it's a unique experience because, oh my gosh, I met another real person that's playing this game. And you get a role play. You're not constrained to the storyline that they have in there or, you know, linear missions. You're just at this liberty to travel throughout this world, and you'll stumble upon stuff, and you get to see all the different, you know, mysteries that's going on with it. So I think just having this art style and this unique type of gameplay, I think it's just wonderful. It's different.
Yeah, there's elements of it that I was looking at earlier. Reminds me a lot of Journey. Just some of the walking around stuff, not necessarily the fighting stuff with the swords, because I saw there was one section where you can, you know, kind of fight and then, you know, go from there. There was one area where the main character, I'm assuming that's the main character, walking through like a marketplace. That was awesome. Just a scene of just watching that happen. I think that was really fantastic. And the thing is, like, it's not that I'm against them. It's just I just don't play them. You know, it's like they're beautiful. I just don't play them. I play Journey maybe a lot of years after four. It was a lot of years after Journey came out that I played Journey. And I was like, why didn't I play this when it came out? And I realized I didn't play it because I was so focused on a Twitch type games, you know, like Twitchy, I should say, type games like Call of Duty and all those type of games. But these games are absolutely amazing, and they create a lasting impact because of their unique story. That's not the cookie cutter things that we see on the larger games that I play, specifically the looter shooters and you know, team deathmatch, teamwork stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what kind of draws me away from certain titles. Like, I don't mind shooters, I don't mind racers, but to me, they're getting to the point where they're all the same, and I want something different. I need a little different flavor in my life. And it's funny, because when I was finding out more information about Book of Travels, because, you know, they have the showcase, they had the conversations about it. Obviously, I'm going to go and look more into it. And I think the first sentence for, you know, Book of Travels that you see in their About Me sections is, join Book of Travels and become part of a unique social role-playing experience that doesn't hold your hand. And I always find a way, and that's what I think is wonderful about video games, is that there are certain games that come into your life or you can relate to in some sense. So I've said this several times already, but my son's going out into the world. And, you know, sometimes he likes to talk to me about stuff that life is just one giant RPG. And the first 18 years is a terrible tutorial that doesn't teach you anything. And just to read this sentence, this a unique social role-playing experience that doesn't hold your hand. That is pretty much what I'm kind of doing with my son, is that I've done whatever I possibly could or the best that I can to teach you what you are, but you have to go out into the world to figure out on your own, without me holding your hand, without me showing you 100% guidance about what you need to do, because you have to explore that on your own. You need to figure that on your own. And that really hit me. Like, that is what you know, that is what, you know, you do even when you leave your own parents' house. You're going out into the world. And wherever path that you may choose to go on or people that you meet, it's, you have your set things that you have to do in your life. You have your set things you have to do in this game, but how you get to that point is part of the journey. And that's how I see this game. And I think it's just so beautiful. I'm like, this is like sitting in at the right spot, which just reminded me of another game I need to add to that indie list for me to talk about. That one hit me too.
That's all good. Yeah. So, definitely make sure we get all that good content, for sure. All right. So I guess the next section we'll say is, you'll hear, Daniela's, top picks of what caught her attention for the indie titles. And we'll be right back after this. Managing your income stream should not be a hassle. That's why I use Catch Financial. As an independent, Catch allows you to manage your income streams on autopilot, prepare your taxes, and more. To get set up on Catch, visit andrew-alliance.com/tools. Once again, that's andrew-alliance.com/tools.
All right. So we talked with Andrew about the two indie games, and really, I can just talk about this so much about every game that came to E3. So like I was saying, even though those AAA titles, they were sprinkled in between, what really shined during E3 was just all of the E3 games that had to be announced. And I'm going to be talking about 15. I know that sounds like a lot, but there were so much more that were announced. So the 15 that I chose were really ones that really stuck out to me and caught my eye almost like instantly. And they're in no particular order about how much I love one more than the other. They're just some that come to my mind and really left a lasting impression on me. So hopefully of these 15 games that I list, you guys go and check it out. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you're going to try it, if you wish listed it, or if you caught it, or what you thought. All right. So the first one that came to mind, it's called A Little to the Left. So it's a very basic, simple, chill puzzle game. Don't expect anything crazy. It's relaxing. That's what I would consider it. And I would actually, I'm amazed because this is going to be coming out on PC, October 21st of this year. So I kind of would assume that this game would also make a great mobile game because it really is a simple puzzle game that is just satisfying to watch with a very, very chill art style. It's very relaxing. So I can picture this as a way for you to just kick back, you know, de-stress from your day. And it's a casual puzzle game. And basically you have this like mischievous little cat, which is like all other cats who just like to mess things up just because. And if you are the type of person who is very meticulous about being organized and neat and tidy, this is for you because that's basically what you're doing for these puzzles is that you're arranging these objects in some of the very obvious patterns that you're going for, but you're going to have to figure it out about what it is or how it is supposed to be organized. And it has like, it says stated on their side, there's over 40 puzzles for you to, you know, work through. And I think that's kind of what it is. And that's what struck me for it because the artwork may be simple, but it's still beautiful. It has a very charming illustration look to it. And it fits perfectly for me just for relaxing. If you got like 10, 15 minutes, or you're working at your desk, some of you are working from home, I think this game fits perfectly when you just want to just stop and just chill. That's what A Little to the Left is that comes across to me. The next one kind of follows somewhat similar to that. It's called Unpacking. And they've actually been sprinkling on their social media about this. And I saw a GIF about it. I want to say it was early 2020. And it kind of has a very similar thing as A Little to the Left, but you're unpacking boxes. That's literally what you're doing. So across the story is you never get to meet or see who you're playing as. You're going through moving from house to house and trying to figure out the type of person or the person that you are and unraveling that story with actual no visuals or not visuals, but no verbal speaking whatsoever. You're just unpacking your boxes and finding out what you like, and you're placing them up on your shelves and you're decorating your apartment. So there's a sense of you get to find out what kind of person they are by the items that they have, how you put it away. I think that's such a unique little twist to it, because you're used to playing a game where you have visuals of your character. You get to interact with others and talk to them, and you get to hear the inflections and the tones. But this one, you don't have it. You're experiencing this person based off of their possessions, and then you get the satisfaction of nicely organizing your area. Again, this falls into something that I could picture myself at the end of my day just chilling out like 20 minutes to like a couple hours just playing. And I thought this is what I need in my life right now. This is why I chose those two as well. Actually, a lot of the indie games that I chose is for this relaxing sense. And I think that's what makes indie games great, is that there's so much different variety that you don't normally see, or you get to even experience. So my next one is Behind the Frame. This is going to be available on PC. No date or announcement as to when it's going to be releasing, which is okay, because a lot of the titles that I'm going to be talking about in this list is actually slated for this year. So that is really nice on my pockets, because I can't just be buying. I want to say, honestly, there was probably 40 indie games, at least. I think initially the day I think I might have wishlisted 32 games. And then as I found out any more gems that I might have missed, I added on more to my Steam wishlist. So I want to say it's probably around 40. But yeah, so Behind the Frame is a beautiful, how do I put it? It's like watercolor, but not. So you play as this aspiring artist who's trying to work on her gallery submissions. And it's not like a paint by numbers, even though you're going to be picking the colors that you're going to be bringing to life of this, you know, canvas that she's working on. But you pretty much, you're painting and you're sketching and you're retouching her artwork. And as you progress through the game and this image comes into focus on her canvas, you get to tap into her memories. And then there's an emotional tale about that gets revealed behind her that can be familiar, but not at the same time. And then, of course, there's like occasionally you'll take time to breaks, because you're not just sitting there painting this canvas. So it's not like painting a canvas like MS Paint or anything like that. But you're not also doing no like Adobe Photoshop or your iPad stuff. This is traditional, beautiful paintbrush art strokes on canvas. But you got to take breaks and get to see her surrounding area, deal with her, you know, her neighbors. And it's very, very much the artwork and style is very much inspired by Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. And if that doesn't even catch you right there in itself, I don't know what will. So hopefully you want to try that. There is more to the just painting part of it. There is a lot of contextual and logic-based puzzles. And then you get to unlock more in the secrets behind your canvas and, you know, your character as you continue on. So that is Behind the Frame. You can wishlist it now on Steam. No exact, you know, date of release. Again, that's okay. That's okay. But speaking on like, you know, Studio Ghibli, it comes into Yokai Inn. Definitely no release dates or what it's going to be released on just yet, because they only started development on it this past January. So the fact that, you know, 6 months later, they had something to even showcase or present for at E3, that blows my mind. So it's one I'm going to be definitely paying attention to in the development of it. So this game is like, it's like a good Animal Crossing Stardew Valley kind of mixture, but instead it has a lot of inspiration and folklore of Japanese folklore that immediately reminds me of Spirited Away, because basically the story is you're forced to take shelter in an abandoned inn, and then you have to place, you know, your springs, your hot baths, and you have these otherworldly patrons that like come in when the sun sets to rejuvenate them yourself. Like that automatically, that's like almost the storyline or semi the storyline of Spirited Away. And Spirited Away is one of my favorite animes. Absolutely beautiful. If you have never, ever watched it, you should. So when Yokai Inn came in, that's like the first thing that I thought of. And it's funny because when I went to go look up more information, sure enough, you know, there's a lot of inspiration there. So I'm going to be paying attention to that. It doesn't quite have the same art style as Spirited Away or Studio Ghibli's. It very much has that look of Animal Crossing Stardew Valley. So if that's your thing and up your alley, that's something for you to pay attention to. Other thing that is up my alley is food. And I noticed this and I tried really, really hard because there's a lot of food games that were available that I wanted to list, because I had this trend that if a game contained anything to deal with food, I almost instantly wishlisted it. I don't know if it was that whole circumstance that I might have been a little bit hungry and I went in watching these games and instantly loved it. It's kind of like that no-no thing that you do when you don't go grocery shopping when you're hungry. But these two that I'm going to pick out of all of them really, really hit me. And they're both unique in two very different ways. So the very first one is called soup pot. Basically, it's a giant hot pot that you're cooking in. This is going to be available on Steam and on Xbox Game Pass actually in August this year. So in about a month and a half. I don't know if I could find anywhere exactly when in August it was, but it does say that they are on track to release in August. So that's pretty awesome. So with soup pot, you're kind of pretty much free to cook this huge range of food. There's over 100 recipes for you to be trying out. And then you're kind of doing this pretend streaming on this in-game social media platform called Cookbook, which I thought was kind of awesome at the same time. I don't know why, because I haven't even been streaming lately, but the fact that I can do a fake stream within a game, it's just like, anyways. But you're not only just cooking these dishes in game, and there's instructions, and you're trying to build your reputation of being this amazing cook. What really sets this apart is that the recipes that are in this game and ingredients, you can actually cook these meals in real life. So you can learn these recipes in game, go through it, learn it, go through your levels, master it, post it on your social media cookbook. But then you can also just go to your grocery store, pick up those same things and cook it home for yourself, for your family, and actually experience it. I don't think there's very many games, at least that I'm aware of, that gives you that freedom. And You don't even have to stick to the recipes that are in the game. Like, you can create your own and go with that. And it's funny because I was like thinking of all like the anime foods that I would love to cook and try out. I'm like, I'm going to see if those ingredients are in this game and give this a try. But I thought that was awesome. I was hungry just watching it. Like, my mouth was watering. I wanted a hot pot meal so badly after watching this. So I have to play this game on a full stomach, and I hope to learn some amazing recipes, because I kid you not, if any of them are successful, my Instagram is just going to turn into food posts of soup pot. That's it. That's all. That's all it's going to be. And then the next one, Venba. Venba is another cooking game, but it's a narrative cooking game that's going to be available winter of this year. It's going to be available on PC. So this one, you can't, I don't think it gives you so much the guidelines to cook meals, but I really want to see that. I don't think I read anywhere really that it says that you're going to be able to, but I feel like it. And I feel like Supot gave me that inspiration that it is possible. That the ingredients in there, I probably have to go look up on Google for a better understanding on how to make the meals, but in Venba, you're playing as an Indian immigrant mom who immigrates to Canada with her family in the 80s. Considering I'm an 80s baby, 80s is awesome. Period. But you're going to be cooking a lot of various dishes. And there's a lot of, through the story, you're restoring a lot of lost recipes. I'm assuming that, you know, you're going through your past and this whole immigration is that let me start off with this one. What it hits me with is that I have grandparents who are immigrants, and you know, a huge part of anybody's culture, regardless of if you immigrated here, or by here I mean US, or even just moving state to state, your roots, your family means a lot. And you know, like as generations continue on, you don't want to lose that. But more specifically, as immigrants, just because you're in a new country, a new environment, a new culture, doesn't mean you have to lose who and what your family is. And I thought that was such a beautiful thing, considering the way that I took it and the way that I'm understanding this game and why I gravitated towards it is food is a huge tie between your culture and your family. And I've said it so many times, like food is a love language in a way, a huge love language. So for a game to be kind of centered around, you know, an Indian immigrant mom, you know, cooking her dishes for her family, restoring lost recipes, trying to be in touch with where she's coming from to where she is now. And you're just pretty much exploring this story of this family, of love, of, you know, the loss of moving away. There's a lot to unpack there. So you can see or feel how and why I chose this game. So I'm looking forward to that. Again, this is going to be on Steam, winter of 2021. And I can't wait to see more of that. And let's catch our feels back, because one of the places that I lived growing up outside of Hawaii was actually LA. And I am slowly learning more about not just indie games, but indie music too. So this next one is called We Are OFK. It's going to be available on Steam 2021. I really wish I had a little bit more of a concrete date on this, but this one looked like a lot of fun. It's basically a story about how four friends are, you know, creating their own indie pop band called OFK, or We Are OFK, and they're living in LA, and they're trying to figure out their lives, make their dreams come true, navigating dating, navigating being able to pay their bills and rent while actually trying to create this successful pop band of theirs. And it's supposed to be episodic, which I'm totally cool with, but the music is like unique. It's genuine. It is made for this game. It's going to be, the music itself was fun. It was fun to watch the trailer with just the music alone. So you're going to be having these stories. You're going to have these music videos being made, and I'm just going to live through my own little, you know, dreams of being in a pop band, because I can't sing and I can't sing an instrument, but I can sure as pretend that I can. So again, that's going to be on Steam later this year. Like I said, a lot of stuff is coming out later this year, if not next month for some of them. The next one was actually, it wasn't a debut trailer for this E3. I believe we saw it during the Summer Games Fest last year, hosted by Jeff Keighley. I want to say it was during that time frame. I can't specifically say which day, but this next one is called Kiwi. And if you remember, it's about two little birds that are literally kiwis named Jeff and Deborah, who, strangely enough, work in a mailroom. That alone, I thought, was really cute and we're really quirky. So I'm pretty glad that it's actually coming out soon. And that's the reason why I added onto my list. Even though it is not necessarily a new indie game that was announced this year, it's one that's actually coming out August 31st. It's going to be on all the platforms. That's PlayStation, Xbox, PC. It'll be there. I believe Switch as well too. You can play this solo. You can do couch co-op. You can do online co-op. I believe with the solo, you actually play both birds with one controller, which I kind of feel and assume it has, like, your left side of your controller is maybe one bird and your right side of controller is the other bird. I'm not sure. I don't care. I just want to play it and be a little weird bird in a mailroom. And I like that. This is obviously very different from the previous games that I listed prior. But birds don't have hands. I don't think I have to tell you that. I think everybody understands that birds don't have hands. So you're going to be jumping, flapping, pecking, and, you know, butt slamming yourself across this, you know, interactive mailroom that has levers, bells, buttons, just to deliver mail. And yeah, because that's what birds do, right? If they're not delivering babies, they're delivering mail. Now, the next one, I'm still not, I feel like I'm going to butcher this name. Before I started recording this, I went to Google to try to, you know, enunciate it. You know how you can type in the word and then, like, you can have the little robot, whatever Google's robot's name is, say it. And there was the English version, the French version, and a British version. They all three sounded different. So apologies, but this is based in France. So I'm assuming the French way, which I don't have a French accent, and I probably would butcher it. So I'm so sorry. But is Dordogne? Dordogne. Oh man, even if I was close to that, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to the French. This one was beautiful. This one is truly probably one of the more unique art styles of this list that I have. So this, Dordogne is going to be available on PC and Switch in 2021. No exact date or month or even, you know, summer or winter, but this is pretty much all almost interactive watercolor. It's a narrative game where you play as Mimi, who is a 32-year-old woman who is actually going back to her grandmother's house, who recently passed away. So she's going through her grandmother's house. She has a souvenir from her grandma about, you know, the childhood memories and summers that Mimi spent with her grandmother in Dordogne. And so her grandmother left her, you know, letters and puzzles to solve and to remind her really to make the most out of her life. So even though you're 30-year-old Mimi now, you will play as a 10-year-old version of Mimi, but as her older self. So you're having just like these flashback memories that you're reliving through. And you, the part that kind of interested me and I was so curious about is that your past timeline affects that of the present. So without, I don't want to spoil myself. And that's one thing I try not to do about games I'm super interested in, especially like finding out too much information. I don't want to exactly spoil it from myself. But when you have a statement like that, I feel like, okay, so if my past timeline can affect that of the present, is there a way for me to save my grandmother for her to live a little bit longer? So 32-year-old Mimi can spend more time with her grandmother in Dodonia. I don't know. But that'd be really cool. And considering how much Flash I've been watching, yeah, maybe you shouldn't mess with the timeline. But the art style of this is just beautiful. I know I said that a lot, but this one, you seriously go Google it. Go look at the trailer and watch this. I know that these types of games isn't for everyone, but I'm saying at least watch the trailer and appreciate the beauty of this. Like, no joke. Ooh, boy, we're almost halfway through this list. Thank you guys for like sticking around with me for this. If there's any indie games that I didn't talk about that you really, really love, definitely hit me up on Twitter at MissyGM. Love to talk about them. I love to broaden my horizons about games that are out there. But we're not done with this list, so maybe the game that you're thinking of is to come. The next one is One Lonely Outpost, which once you see it, you instantly get a Stardew Valley Graveyard Keeper feel to it. It's pretty much the type of gameplay that it is, except it is set in space. Pretty much. So you have a farming colony, very similar to, you know, Stardew Valley, and you have a community that lives around there. And so you can either choose to have your traditional farm animals and your normal produce, or you can have robot cows and gene spliced crops. I don't know, and maybe it's just me, but who's going to choose normal traditional farm animals when you can have robo cows? I'm just saying. And of course, like other previous ones, you got a dating sim in here too, because you can find a love interest and then you can go exploring alien ruins. You can go and socialize with the other colonists. So that is One Lonely Outpost. I did pass over playing Stardew Valley only because I liked playing Harvest Moon. That was more my jam. And Graveyard Keeper, definitely also more my jam. But you're adding space to this now. You're adding space and weird animals. So, Space Dew Valley here, aka One Lonely Outpost, be available on PC October of 2021. Ooh, boy. Ooh, okay. Since we're on that, I know I keep bouncing in between. I should have like organized this list to have games that are similar to each other. Like I did that for a couple early ones. So I'm going to bounce around my list here. Very similar to that as well, too, is The Wandering Village. So this one also has, you know, the farming to it. But the little twist that is different is you are creating a life on the back of a giant named Ombu, who just wanders through. He's just wandering through this land, and you're trying to get away from this toxic spore that is basically contaminating the planet. And you're just a group of people who are just trying to find shelter and stay alive and stay ahead of this toxic spore, which I don't think you can do that forever, but you're trying to. You're trying your best. And your character, you become the leader. You kind of, you build your settlement. You build this relationship with this giant ombu that you're riding across so that you can survive together in this hostile world that's trying to kill you. And this also has some really great unique art style to it because it's a blend of 3D and hand-drawn, hand-animated 2D graphics. So, The Wandering Village. Going to be available on PC later this year. Okay, now I can bounce around to different types of categories. So we had one game that brought back to the 80s, which is Venba. So this next title is actually set in the 70s, which is also an awesome decade for its spectacular music. And it's called A Musical Story, which is going to be available on all the platforms and iOS. Sorry, Android. Sorry, me. I'm Android. But it'll be available on all platforms on October 2021. So you're basically playing as Gabriel, who to me pretty much looks like Jimi Hendrix. That's not a bad thing at all. And so he's trying to come to terms with his situation, which to me, it pretty much looks like he's dying. And he's trying to make these connections, but they're musical memory connections that he plays through and remembers of his life. So if you're going to watch your life flash be, you know, before your eyes, what better way to do it than through music? Because if it's not food, music ties people together. Music has such a strong connection to so many people. No, I can take that back. I met one person who absolutely does not like music. So maybe not for that guy. Maybe that guy is a food guy. But at least for me, there's a lot of memories that I can tie to food and music or one or the other. And that's kind of what you're playing through here. So the original soundtrack has 26 songs, and you're going to be, if you play them correctly, if you play the melody correctly, it opens up a new chapter into Gabriel's past, which brings him closer to the truth, whatever that may be. And if you play every song perfectly, you also get to unlock a hidden chapter. And there's, as to my understanding, there isn't a whole lot, or if any, you know, text or voice acting. You're just going through music. And if the music has that 70s feel for it, and the fact that this dude looked like Jimi Hendrix, I am there 100%. So this is A Musical Story, available on all platforms, October later this year. Oh, man. We are getting there. We got three more titles. I can't believe it. So, Unmetal. Unmetal is definitely a game type that I don't care for too much, personally. But this one caught me. This one caught me for a couple of reasons. So, Unmetal basically stars this antihero that you play, whose name is Jesse Fox. He's a soldier. He's in prison for a crime he didn't commit. And then, like, instantly, like, during the trailer, it shows, like, he's narrating. He's like, I'm in prison for a crime I didn't commit. And then the NPC says exactly that. He's like, you're being arrested for a crime you didn't commit. It is an action shooter that is just like a spoof. And if I was going to choose a spoof of two genres, so obviously it pays homage to Metal Gear, 100%. But it also has like the comedic nature. And I took this as a, if you ever watch, I think it came out in the 90s, had Charlie Sheen in it. It was called Hot Shots. And there's two of them. They're spoof movies and they're hilarious. It's like an action spoof with the just the comedy in it, and that's what this game reminded me of. So if you took like Metal Gear with Hot Shots and made it into this pixelated action shooter you would get a medal. So after he gets, you know, imprisoned wrongfully, he finds himself in this plot to attack NATO. He has to assault a military base to save the world, and he can only use his sneaky skills and equipment, which is basically Metal Gear. And it's because of that, like, funny little twist that I'm like, okay, you got me. I'm gonna have to play you too. And add that to my long list of games and library. But this is gonna be available on PC sometime this summer. So soon, I hope. Well, actually, I got a couple games, so I can wait till the later end of summer. Which brings me to another title that I again, visually, like, not visually, just, it's just the type. I'm not a huge platformer type of person at all. It's more because I suck at them and I get frustrated, but there are some platforms that I think I really enjoy. It really catches my eye and it turns out to be great, and I'm not that terrible at it that it ruins my experience. But one that you should definitely be keeping an eye on is probably one of the titles that I have listed here that comes out much later. But it's called Replaced. It's going to be available on Steam, on Epic, and Xbox in 2022. There's no set, like, quarter about when, but I'm not going to use the word cyberpunkish to even try to describe this. It is a retro futuristic action platformer, and you're basically playing as an AI that is trapped in a human body against its own will. And, like, the way that it's not a true 2D, it's a 2.5D, 2.5D, however way that you want to say that. And the way that they had it styled and designed made it so intriguing to me that I wanted to pay attention and to see where it was going. And, like, that whole thing about an AI trapped in a human body against its own will, I'm like, all right, that sounds like a really good story to really want to know. But it's a cinematic platformer with pixel art. It has this free flow action combat with this dystopian story that's set in the 1980s. I think things set in the 80s kind of get me there too, because, hello, reminder, 80s babies, 80s are awesome, specifically 1984. Just throwing that out there. So you're going to be pretty much exploring and covering mysteries around Phoenix City, and see and learn how to be a human, basically, in society. And In this world, you're pretty much ruled by corruption and greed, which I think is pretty much status quo for any dystopian era. And the ones I see, the ones in power, pretty much see humans as basically organs, as are just pretty much currency. So I'm in there. I'm going to give this a try. I'm glad that there's some time for me to, you know, give my wallet a little bit of a rest. But the last one, is one of the second title that actually I heard about previously that I am definitely excited of. I've been waiting a few years for this one to come out. I know it's been, you know, I think the first time I saw it was 2017. It's definitely changed quite a bit since then, but it's been really super quiet. So this one actually comes out August 19th. It's called 12 Minutes. It's going to be available on Xbox and Steam. And this one has some top-notch voice actors in it. Like, you have William Dafoe. Come on. William Dafoe. And it's pretty much what the title says is 12 minutes. You're stuck in this, like, nightmare of a Groundhog's Day, but you only got a 12-minute time loop that you are doomed to pretty much relive over and over again. So you take on the role of the husband who is trying to enjoy a romantic night out with his wife. It turns into a nightmare. Police like come breaking into your home. Your wife is accused of murder, and then you're beaten to death. And then the 12 minutes relive itself. So you, every time it's reset, you have the opportunity to learn something new and try out something different and try to figure out what is going on and gain some type of knowledge before the 12 minutes start over again. Like, that gives me some like Memento like vibes right there. Like, come on. And it's just, it's like this one single room. It's not like this, you like, you have this whole area. You got this room to you to figure it out. And I love that puzzle element, that suspense, that thrill. So this is definitely like one of my top games that I'm excited that comes out really, really soon. August 19th happens to be my brother's birthday. Perfect. I'm probably going to gift this to him. He's not going to understand why, but, I'm glad that's going to be soon because I know what I'm doing for my birthday weekend is playing this game. But yeah, that brings my sum up to all the indie games that really stuck out to me and I wanted to share with you guys. I hope you guys enjoyed the list of games I threw out there. Definitely let me know if there's any that really struck you or more that I didn't even get to hear about yet, because like I said, I could seriously talk about every indie game that came out. They're definitely the type of games that I will gravitate towards. I am a very strong believer that indie games is just art. Like there's a place, and I appreciate AAA titles. I appreciate the bigger titles. I appreciate Borderlands. I you know what? Hellblade, I think, is borderlining on that indie and AAA big title games there. What other big title names? I love like the Overwatch announcements. Even though I'm not a fan of it, I love the Halo stuff that came out. I know there are people are excited about it. I more love it for the people who actually cares about that series. I love Gears of War. So it's not like I am just strictly indie, but there's just a game for every type of person within the indie category. They're not as action packed and crazy as, you know, big title games are, but they have this way of just being relatable. And I feel like there is a game that every person that can relate to them at some stage in their life that they can understand. Which reminds me, there's a game actually I missed that I did not put on here. I'm not going to put on, well, maybe if I can remember the name of it. But there's an indie title that I feel like that I can play, that I can understand, that I can relate to for something that I'm working on or working through that I think it's just art and it's just beautiful and just wonderful. As a bonus, because I'm thinking about that, there is one game that's called No Longer Home, and it's slated to come out sometime this year. But the way that I'm relating to this, and I kind of want to play this with my son, is my son is going to be leaving. He's going to be moving. He's going to be moving out, going to the Air Force, hopefully, you know, expanding and going on with his life. So in this game, No Longer Home, it's a game about letting go of the life you built due to circumstances that are beyond your control. And you immerse yourself in the lives of Bo and Ao and learn about their dreams, frustration, and fears. And that is something that's like, I think me and my son are going to have to work through, because in this game, these two characters are graduating university and they're preparing to leave this home that they've lived in together for a year. And going separate ways, and they are going through what this educational life of what life and adult life is supposed to have been like, and trying to figure out their own ways, which is kind of something that, you know, it's really hard as, you know, as a teen growing into being a young adult and figuring out what adult life is. And for me as a parent, who's going to have to figure out what life is going to be with an empty nest without having, you know, my son with me and the uncertainties of so many things. So this is something, it's like, it's not exact, but it's something is similar, and it's something that feeling is kind of similar. And that's what I think indie games offers people that I think that so many don't understand. Like, yeah, there's these small teams putting together these great stories and art and experiences. But I think if you really took the time, there's a game out there for you to help work your way through emotions, through hard times that you can relate to, that play a part. And somehow I've a lot of the things I've gone through in my life, there has been a game for it. And I don't know if there's like a lot of people who can relate to that. I know that that's definitely something that's true to me, that I believe in, and that's why I love them. On top of that, they're just unique. They are each individual amazing pieces of art that I hope people will give it a try. And hopefully they come out with a deeper appreciation of indie games, or just surprised, or if I'm unlucky, they're just not for them. And yeah, so if there's something that you loved, that you like, definitely let me know. And thanks for listening to my Danny Indie Corner. Okay, sure.
Looking for the best VPN in the world? Your search is over. From the makers of Proton Mail comes Proton VPN, the best free VPN in the world. Proton VPN is Swiss-based, has a no-locks policy, offers the highest strength encryption, strong VPN protocols, and all apps are open source and audited. To try Proton VPN for free, visit andrew-alliance.com/tools. Once again, that's andrew-alliance.com/tools. All right, guys, we're back. I'm sure you got some good picks that you weren't paying attention to that Daniela just spoke about. So definitely check those out for sure. Some of those picks included Supot, Yo Kai In, Behind the Frame, and much, much more. Hope you enjoyed that particular segment that Daniela just gave. So free games, Daniela. How do you feel about free games? Do you get them?
Awesome. Well, I do.
Okay.
Do I forget that I have them? Yes, I do. And then I accidentally buy them somewhere else. And then I'm wondering what terrible choices I've made.
Yeah, there's
terrible. I'm glad I bought them, but still I forget that I bought them.
I love the fact that Epic has been doing this for a while. I don't even know how long they've been doing this. But the fact that we get the games that we get, especially, you know, at one point when they were doing the celebration for Batman, they gave pretty much all the Batman games. That was dope. That's not considered an indie game. That's a big scale. I'm just thinking out loud here. I'm not asking. I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't think it's an indie game. That's a large scale game. That was Rocksteady Studios at that time. Games like Overcooked, right? That's indie, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
That'd be indie, right? So you get a mix of all those games, especially with Epic games. Upcoming, you have Hell Is Other Demons, Overcooked 2, Horizon Chase Turbo, which is like an Outrun type game. That looks fantastic. And the one that I'm probably going to be playing a lot of is Sonic Mania. Sonic Mania and Horizon Chase Turbo, that releases on June 24th through July 1st. And then the Overcooked and Hell Is Other demons that's available right now through the 24th. So free games. I mean, you get the opportunity to get these things on a regular basis. I think I've got a lot of dope games I never had in this program, if you want to call it that, which includes the Batman games, GTA 5, NBA 2K 2021, right? And now upcoming very, very soon, Sonic Mania, which I'm so excited. I'm looking forward to playing that because I love Sonic. So that's going to happen. Free games. What's on your radar? What are you looking forward to?
What am I looking forward to?
Yeah, just games in general and some of the things that's on the radar for you. What's on your mind and schedule?
I just went blank on the games that are coming out in July and August, and they're indie titles too. I got them noted somewhere.
Are you picking up Ninja Gaiden, the collection? I've been hearing there's bugs in that one.
I don't know. I really don't know. I was this close to picking up Dark Alliance because that came out today.
Yeah, I saw you tweeting about that. Yeah.
Oh, apparently it's not doing so good.
Okay.
That's starting to turn into a little bit of a pet peeve, but I gotta look into it more. It's like these games that are coming out.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's indie, AAA, whatever it may be. Why do they gotta have so many problems when they really, like, come on.
I guess time constraints. Are we saying that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I really honestly don't. I don't know, but it's turning into a slight irritation here.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
I didn't spend the money on it. It is available on Game Pass. So if, you know, you're not ready to spend, you know, the $40, $60 on it, it's on Game Pass. So that's awesome there. Just to give it a try. I got to double check on something because every time I assumed when things are in Game Pass, it's going to be on the PC side too. And there's been a couple titles lately where it's like, oh, just console, not the PC side.
Right.
Okay. So that has caught me off guard there. And I was really hoping to play it on PC. So I got to double check. So at least if you're on console, you can go and give it a try. Like it, please let me know. If it's not available on PC, I don't think I'm ready to be dropping no money on something that, you know, people, I don't really necessarily believe or take, you know, reviews too seriously unless I know that the person who is reviewing it, we have a similar taste in games. But I am taking the opinions of friends of mine who have jumped the gun really quick, who are kind of mildly disappointed at the moment and just hoping, you know, that it would pick up and make some patches, some changes. It's just really sad because I was actually really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I didn't really realize anything about it until I saw you tweeting about it earlier. I was like, oh, okay, that's I guess that's cool, maybe. Because the list is so short for me at this point, right? In terms of expectations. Turtles, Halo, and maybe some things in between. Destiny is interim for pretty much most of the time. Streets of Rage, sometimes for pastime. Outside of that, there isn't any major title that really sticks out. You know, Horizon, I'm having fun with that on the driving side of things. And then after that is really just reading and just catching up on different, you know, news, different genre of news, that kind of stuff, and just education on different things that aren't related to gaming. So it's really, it feels very thin, even though we saw a lot, it feels very thin based on what's coming out. So when we look at July through August, and as we get ready to head towards Gamescom, it's like, okay, what are we looking for? Are we looking for anything to come out at Gamescom, or just some things that are going to be reaffirmed for that particular month? What are your thoughts on that?
I think titles that I can only think of one though, at the moment, I think titles that we were hoping or expecting to see at E3 have some type of presence there. Like the big one for me that we talked about earlier is Hellblade 2. That was missing. So to hopefully get an update or a new trailer, that would be fantastic. For games that are coming out during the holiday season, I'm expecting to see more information about that. But nothing really big that I can really see. Like if they got any more to show for Elden Ring, we are there. So, but other than that, nothing for me personally that I can really say that I'm really, really hoping for from Gamescom.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. So, I'm pretty excited for the rest of the year, especially leading to the 20th anniversary of Xbox stuff. I'm excited for all the Halo stuff, and I love Halo on PC. So I definitely have to mention that. But what else is going on, Danielle?
Okay. So I got it. I found my list of the games that are coming out the next 2 months. One that I pre-ordered, I forgot I pre-ordered because I was still debating it, and Amazon pretty much made the decision for me because I can't cancel my order now. Scarlet Nexus, that comes out in about 4 days, but because I ordered it on Amazon, I don't know why, really don't know why, because I should have just bought the digital copy. It will not get here till July 6th, and I can't cancel the order because it's already in the shipping process, but it is a game I do want to play. So Scarlet Nexus is really cool. That comes out in 4 days, 12 minutes. Which is another indie title that we saw that comes out in August. What else was there? There was a couple. I don't want to go over too much. Oh, Ender Lilies, Quietest of the Night. That comes out in July. So those are currently my three that I'm keeping my eyes out on. One is already being shipped to me. So the other two are releasing in July and August. That's what's on my board.
Okay. All right. We're still playing games. Still all good. What else you got?
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. What else you got?
I don't know. I know there's a lot that's coming out that people are going to probably be jumping on pretty quick too. Because I think that Vampire Masquerade is coming out next month. If I'm not mistaken, I think that has a release date sometime next month. It could be wrong, but I knew it was supposed to be soon. So it's not next month. Maybe it's like August. Oh, and Soup Pot. Soup. Oh my goodness. I'm just going to go back down this indie title thing. I'm just going to go back right into that. No, we're not going to do that. But those are the three that I'm looking for. Four that I'm looking forward to.
That's all good. What else is on your mind? What's happening?
I don't know. There's so much. Okay, so since we're still on this E3 thing, the one thing that we and I both didn't really do was really share if we applied or didn't, and approved or denied. And I kind of had really, really big things because we did say in previous episodes we weren't going to apply, and then last minute on that same night, for whatever reason, you're like, I think I'm going to apply. I'm like, that's funny because I just did.
And we can't help ourselves.
I was curious. I did get curious. But here's a funny thing is, I didn't get approved, but neither did I get denied.
That's weird.
I got no response.
That's weird.
No response, but I would keep getting emails and be like, oh, this thing got updated, you can see, check this out, go sign into your portal. I go and sign into the portal, I'm like, still pending approval. I'm like, okay. But I didn't feel one way about it or not. Like, I'm stoked for everybody who got their approvals, who got approved to co-stream it, because that was a huge thing too. Before, I really wanted to co-stream E3. And I think the general consensus I got was that E3 was fine with people co-streaming it, but they couldn't control whatever Twitch did, and that they only had so many licenses that they could give out to people so that they didn't get the DMCA, that they were approved and it was okay. Which I had a that is nothing on E3 side of it. That is all Twitch that is kind of really hindered people being able to co-stream, because the years prior, so many people would co-stream, you know, all of the events if they couldn't actually be there and just watch it with their community, and they couldn't do it. So I ended up just watching it in Discord with my community. That's fine. I didn't have any DMCA strikes there. But obviously, I just wanted to know what kind of different info and opportunities and things that you get or try. But I didn't. I wasn't upset about it one way or another. Obviously, I want people to share their, you know, their triumphs of getting it. And I kind of sat there and I kind of wondered, I'm like, if I did get approved, I don't think I would have shared it.
Why not?
I think after a while, I kind of like keeping some of my accomplishments to myself. I think that first initial approval, of course, I wanted to share that with the entire world. I am stoked. I got my media pass. Yay me. Like, I think that first initial, that very first approval that you ever get is really, really huge. And even the second one, I did share it, but I didn't share it as big and as grand as the first time. If I got approved the third time, I kind of think of, like, to me, I felt like, okay, am I just rubbing it into people's faces now? Like, I'm going to still be stoked. I'm still going to tell my friends. I'm still going to be happy for myself. But I don't know if I just would want to just, like, put it out there like that. I think for me, it was like that first approval was awesome. And I kind of would be there at that. Like, I want to share something new.
It is new.
I don't know. Like,
it's okay, a new so year and a new approval. I don't want to answer yet. I want to like think about what you were just sharing. It's still new. It's a new year, and it's an accomplishment, and it can inspire somebody to apply next year that didn't apply this year, whatever year it is. I'm just using this and next year as by way of an example. It's still something that can inspire someone who looks like you to be inspired to come out of their comfort zones and build the courage and confidence to even apply. So there's a lot of newness about it that we may not recognize because we're in it.
Yeah. I think, okay, if there was a physical one, I don't know if I would do the whole screenshotting my email thing again. I'd probably say, like, okay, I'll see you guys at E3, and just there. Be done with it, and just here it is. I also think at some point, after a while, and I guess for me, third time, or fourth time, like I want to share it, but not as big, because there are people that I feel like no matter what year I go, approved or denied, there's gonna be somebody's first time. And I don't feel like me announcing it will take away from their shine, but I want people to really focus on those that it's being their first time, their approval or media or you know, content creator, to be excited about it. And it's a weird thing because like I said, I don't feel like I'm taking away from somebody else's being able to celebrate, but I'd rather that focus be on that person. And I'll put something small like, yeah, I'll see you guys there, or I'll see you there, or respond to that. I'm so excited. I'm so for you. There you go. I don't think I want that, I guess, attention or clout in that sense.
I think this is one of the first times I'll actually say, like, a blanket statement, I'm not with you on this one. And then I'll give the reasons why. Okay, so let's just give the reason why. Because I think you should feel free to celebrate that however you choose to celebrate that. I guess that's the angle that I'm playing here. If you decide that you don't want to share it, because you don't want to share it, I don't want that to be because you believe that you're diminishing someone else's, you know, approval or whatever the case might be. I think you should be fully free to express your accomplishment if you got a t-shirt or if you got $1,000 badge, whatever the case might be, without any hindrance, without your mind thinking about how is this going to make somebody else feel, without any of that, because you worked hard to get here. And I think that if it's a water bottle, if it's a t-shirt, if it's a Arby's sweatsuit, whatever the case might be, I think you should be free to take a picture and celebrate that without any hindrances. And if there's anybody who considers you a person showing off or anything like that, that is my great opportunity to remove, mute, delete, and et cetera, et cetera. That's how I approach it now, because we have so many things that we can enjoy. I'll stop there. Any thoughts there?
Well, from my mindset, nobody's telling me that I shouldn't enjoy those things. Nobody's telling me that I'm taking away from their shining star. Nobody has told me that at all. I think just for me personally, that's the way I see it. Like, I don't think I'm jaded. I don't think like there's every year is an opportunity to be denied from something. And I already like I kind of go into things expecting that I'm going to be denied. So that if I get approved, I'm like, oh, yay, I got approved.
You mean like low expectations?
Yeah, kind of there. Or just okay. Realistic expectations. There's always a 50-50. There's nothing that's guaranteed. So it's always exciting. Yeah, it is exciting when you get that approval or you get that message like, yay, you're coming.
I disagree. So we can amplify the conversation. Some things are guaranteed if you know the right people. And if they stay in those positions, you're almost guaranteed a spot the next year.
Well, I just know people and then I just hope that they like
There's me. Things that I could share right there to kind of like amplify that, but I don't want to blow anybody's spot up. On the professional side of things, like if you know the right people, there are things that could be recurring for you that because they know you and they know your work. That's a good place to put that. And it could be recurring into the gates of opportunity that open up for you because they know you and they know your work. Sometimes it's quantity, right? Either they ran out of the quantity or whatever the case might be. Sometimes it's they don't have as much time as they used to look at the second batch of whatever from the first batch. Because that kind of happens, especially when you're applying for conferences and stuff like that. And sometimes we believe it's personal and it's not personal. I'll stop there.
Well, I can say for me, celebrating or sharing it publicly is more of a personal choice rather than anybody pressuring me or not pressuring me to do it.
I take that. I can take that.
I don't know. There's just something at some point where I just want to be able to appreciate stuff privately.
Well, I want to celebrate with you. So camp. I would like to know.
I would tell you. Okay. I would tell you.
Okay.
But like, okay. So if I were applied for a media for PAX, cause that would be like my first time ever, which was supposed to be last year, but that didn't happen. For PAX West, not PAX East. I think PAX East is coming up. If I apply for that and I got approved, that'd be my first time. I'd be stoked and I'd be sharing that everywhere. Maybe the second time I would too. Anything above that?
But it's still exciting. It's a new year. It's still exciting.
But now I want to enjoy it in like a more intimate, like private thing with like, I got this.
And okay.
Have that with, you know, with other people. Because at the same time, like I said earlier, I also want other people to to enjoy that first time too. Cause I think that's, I get super excited when people get approved for things for the first time and they're stoked and excited. You can't relive that excitement all over again. A full on like break dance, happy dance when I got approved the first time.
For the first time, no, I agree there, but it's still exciting.
It's still exciting. It's just not the same level of excitement. But at the same time, I don't think if I got denied, I'm going to put whatever outlet is going to... Okay, let's just say E3. If I got denied from E3, I'm not going to really put it out there like, hey, I got denied. I did all this work. Why'd you deny me?
Some people will.
Some people will. For me, if I can possibly email them back and be like, hey, what was I missing? And hopefully get a response back. I don't know. The chances of that happening are like kind of few and far between there. Because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, why didn't you approve me?
Yeah, it happens. And sometimes they'll tell you too. Like you were missing a couple of docs and stuff. Yeah.
So I would do that for hopefully for some constructive criticism and feedback. But I don't think I would necessarily put them on blast, be like, I did all of this work and I did this and you had me for the last 3 years. What happened this year? You know, I would go as far back as probably emailing back like, hey, nothing has really changed. I've been doing the same stuff, same content, same frequency. Nothing has really changed from the last previous 3 years. What's up with year 4 here?
Yeah. I think motive. Yeah, I think motive is really motive. We know what the motive is either during, before, or after. We kind of find out when once you start putting the pieces together, then you find out why someone decides to say something or not say something or react a certain way on social media. We tend to find out what the motive is. Even though they're telling us one thing, we see what the action is, right? And we're like, well, if that was the case, then you wouldn't have said or done this, right? And I think that we see this thing play out over and over again with different situations, past situations, or whatever the case might be. And I think motive is extremely important. Like, you may not know it at the time, but if someone posts and they are series of posts, once you start connecting the dots, you kind of figure, okay, so you just wanted the attention. And social media is all about attention, right? So you wanted the attention, or you wanted somebody to feel bad for you or something like that, right? And then you go down the line and you can conclude based on how people, you wanted affirmation, or you wanted encouragement, or you wanted validation. Right. So once you start going down all those different things, you kind of find out why people do what they do. Right. And I've done them all. I've done encouragement. I've done validation. I've done motivation. I've done inspiration. I've done all those things on social media. I don't know what I'm doing lately, but I just retweet things. Encouragement, you know, for others, depending on what the tweet is, you know, proud of you here. Dope. That's dope there. Retweet a book, you know, release or of someone or whatever the case might be. So that guys, that'd be fall under encouragement. So motive is extremely important. Celebrating other people's wins and stuff like that. And I think that going back to what we were just talking about, it all comes back to that, I think.
Yeah, it does. It depends on the motives for both cases. And for me, like losses, I'll talk about stuff that like I'm disappointed in or something that didn't go my way. But I think nowadays and lately, I want to say in the last like year at least, and it's not because of all the drama that happens, it's just the way that I want to project myself or my image, is that I don't necessarily want sympathy. And because it's really hard to phrase things without people just naturally giving that sympathy, I don't say anything because I'm like, there's no right way for me to say this because I'm not looking for it, but I know I'm going to get it. So I'm not going to say anything publicly like that.
Right. So I have a question for you.
What's that?
Where do I typically talk about losses?
Privately.
Here. Yeah. And it's not really private. I talk about it here.
Well, there's some
stuff. All. Well, some stuff I'll speak directly to you about it. And we'll kind of navigate that out before my brain explodes or whatever. But most of the losses, after thinking about it, I talk about it here because the context of the audio here is more powerful than a tweet that's, you know, 128 plus characters, or a tweet longer, which I'm not going to do. Or I'll talk about it on a live stream or something like that, which audio or video or whatever. But I talk about it here because we can kind of like navigate it together versus just a one-off tweet or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's
healthier, I think.
I think so. Well, it's healthier for me because I get to talk about it with you, and then we get to kind of like, you know, walk through it a little bit and figure out if I could have done something better, or, you know, we could have navigated something better, or even us checking on each other when we're asking, hey, are you good? Are we good? Did I do something to offend you? Even when we do stuff like that, I think that's healthier than me trying to find out or post a random tweet and say, well, I don't know if Danielle is talking to me today. Like, that's, there's no context for that. Right. Which I'm not going to do that on social media because I think that's dangerous. It paints a picture that isn't real when I know that we have a great relationship. But if I say something like that and I laugh behind it, then, you know, it's a joke. But if I have no context for those tweets or whatever the tweet is, personally or professionally or whatever, I think it's dangerous.
Yeah, that comes with maturity. That definitely does, because I can tell you, I think I've been on Twitter for almost 12 years now. And early, I want to say the first 8 years of my time on, maybe even 10 years of my time on Twitter, was like spewing things as I felt them, which you shouldn't feel like you have to censor yourself. But there's a time and a place to say certain things and how you should say certain things, like just kind of like in person. If you're a kind person and nice, you're not going to straight up tell the person that you're really upset at exactly how you're feeling. You're going to let yourself cool down because you're going to say things that you don't necessarily mean, but in the heat of the moment, it just comes out. So, like, one of I feel like is a loss, and I've talked to you about it, but I have not put it anywhere on social media, is that me and my boyfriend were contracted to do a trailer for a specific game that I will not talk about. And I was very, you know, communicated with them. Let me know if it's good, if it's not, if it needs to be reshot, if you need us to do something else, is there something wrong with the audio? And they're like, no, it's great. It's fine. And I was like, here's your contract. Here's the thing. We signed the contract, but they didn't sign their signature to send back to us. So I think that's where they're catching us with this.
Repeat that last part again.
Release.
So about the signing? They sent you a contract, yeah.
We went over it. We agreed with it. We signed it. The section where that studio, whoever there is in charge of that part of that contract, did not sign it to, like, say we're signing off on it. So that part is blank still. It's not even signed. It wasn't even sent back to us.
Gotcha.
And that's probably where I made a mistake, is that I sent them our footage before we got the finalized contract back. So that's a learning experience on my half.
And you know how much individuals you just helped out with that? Just by sharing that?
Yeah. But like, even really sitting there to really think about this and see it out, like me right now putting it into a tweet, like I am still like a little bit heated about it. But their game came out. We were not told beforehand that none of our footage, which took us like 5-6 hours to record, was used. None of it. And there was no communications about, you know, what was wrong. They didn't get back to me on feedback about like why. Like I would be okay with, and totally understanding with, like, hey, you know, this didn't fit into this situation. The audio was off for this, or it wasn't exactly the energy we're looking at. I can totally be fine with that type of feedback, and I can understand, and I let it go. And I got nothing. Neither one of us got nothing. And I think we got some. Part of their marketing team sent us some stuff. I don't think it'll give it away. A couple headsets. And we got a nice little, you know, release day package. But the day that it was released, and to see that, to not see the feedback or response, or that we weren't in the trailer, or why we weren't in it. I didn't post any of their stuff. I didn't. But I'm like, no. Just no. And I did not post or share anything about that loss and that learning experience. Am I going to work with this studio again? No. And what really, really sucks is I enjoyed their game. Am I going to stream their game? No. Am I going to buy it? No. But the thing is, like, I know words can have an impact. I can have an impact. Do I want them to necessarily fail? No. Do I want them sending angry messages? No. Do I want people boycotting them? No. I want people to enjoy the game, because their game is still, it was a lot of fun. They are a smaller studio. Up until the part they stopped talking to me, they were good people. I'm sure they still are, but I don't even know if they know how to navigate a content creator. That's really upset. Like, just be open and honest. That's all you had to, you know, how to do.
Question for you.
The fact that we didn't even get paid for our time.
Yeah.
But I see that because we didn't get the finalized contract and I sent them over their stuff, that's where they can possibly catch me. So I'm going to let that go and let that be, and lesson learned.
If they provided closure to some degree, how different do you think this conversation would be?
Oh, I'd be perfectly fine. I can post a loss of like, hey, I did this. It didn't work out because it wasn't exactly what they wanted. I mean, I can always take that feedback and that closure or whatever they provided me as to a reason why we weren't included. I could move on with that. But the fact that I'm not, I'm sitting here drawing too many conclusions on my own, because in this trailer, there is no person of color in this trailer.
I did see that.
So, me and then seeing all the other content creators that we use, nothing on them. Absolutely nothing on those content creators. I don't know them. I have nothing to go off of them. They seem like perfectly fine people. That is a decision that studio decided to make. But my boyfriend and I being the only two people of color that were possibly asked, I don't know how many other people were assigned to do this, or, you know, contracted to do this. Kind of leaves a weird taste in my mouth there. I'm like, Okay. It is what it is. That's where it is. I'm going to leave it. You're going to stay on that side of the gaming world. I'm going to be on this side of the gaming world, and I will not touch your indie games. But I'm not going to tell other people to never, ever touch theirs.
Right.
Because I don't want that on people. That's a personal issue that I have with this person, that I'm not going to make it everybody else's. What I will do in private is, if I have a friend, another content creator, another podcaster, or whatever it is that has, you know, something in the works to work with them, I will tell them in private, this is the experience I had with them and this is what happened. If you choose to go with it, make sure you do this. And just let it be. If they work with them or don't work with them, that's
if they ask you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know if they ask, because it's not like you're the only person I literally told.
You know what? I know what I'm saying is, like, there's a lot of things that happen. There's a lot of things that take place in the industry that sometimes I think that prompting information has backfired for me. Like, because I hear
I can see how that happened.
That's what I'm saying, right? I get so much data from things, and I have to find a way to filter that data and use it wisely for me and for other folks. But sometimes prompting information, because I have the data, So it's not even my experience, but that data is experience on how to navigate certain things, having prompted it to someone, thinking that was going to help them, that ended up backfiring on me. And I vowed the greatest vow to never, ever do that again. So I guess sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good.
I have to learn that lesson on my own. But I can see how that can go bad.
Yeah.
And the person I tell this to will most certainly be something that somebody that I'm really close with. Like if you're kind of acquaintance, like far off, like I know you through somebody else who knows you through somebody else, I don't think I would go way out of my way to like reach out to them and like, no, you shouldn't do this. And that's the thing is, even somebody that I am super close with and they are considering it, I wouldn't directly tell them like, no, you don't want to work with these people. It's more of like, hey, this happened to me. So if you're going to this, make sure that, you know, yeah, get that finalized contract back and you really kind of maintain that communication with them to really hit them up of, is this what you want? Are you sure? But I think it's definitely having that finalized contract.
Yeah. But I know you just helped a lot of folks with that. Because, I mean, that's tough.
And I was excited for that, too. Because
I know.
It
won't be the last one.
Why?
It won't be the last one.
I know. But even then, like, I didn't share it. I still don't even have the words. Or even if I want to, like, share that in a tweet form, just there. This is probably going to be something angry.
I'm glad you shared it in this way, because you know there's a lot of folks who are going to benefit from you sharing that information, because you could have kept that to yourself, like literally.
Yeah, I pretty much was.
I know. So no, that's good stuff. Yeah. So I think, you know, to kind of cap it off, if someone is not marginalized and they want to tell me how to enjoy things or not enjoy things, how things work or not work, they're not marginalized, they're not indie, and they've been in the game industry for a very, very long time. You can't tell me how to celebrate or not celebrate things when they happen to me as an independent content creator. I don't care who it is. If you're not marginalized, and you're working for whatever, some big company in the industry, you've probably attended every single event that ever came out ever since the 80s, 90s, or whatever the case might be. You can't tell me how to get excited or not get excited about things that happen to me and the work that I have to put in while you're representing one of the biggest companies, if not, you know, a big company in the gaming industry. We can't see eye to eye on a lot of things. Unless you really feel like you're actually giving advice that is supposed to help me. Outside of that, I'm not going to we can't relate. That's all I have on that.
But I want you to celebrate stuff that only I want you to be happy with.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about
you're not
that.
Be happy about nothing.
I don't know about that. No, but I think that's where we are. You know, celebrate your wins. Share it with people you love. And if people do not celebrate your wins with you, then you got to get some people who celebrate your wins with you. You just have to, because wins are dope. Wins are really dope. So yeah. So that's all I have there. Final thoughts on that, and then we'll kind of begin wrapping.
That's it.
Cool. Sony PS5 beta program, I guess that's a thing that's supposed to be happening very, very soon. I guess to some degree, later this year. Okay, so look out for that if you're waiting. This was posted on June 17th. PlayStation 5 beta program ahead of the console's next major system update. So later this year, look for that. You have a PS5. How are you liking it?
I like it. I signed up for it.
Nice. Post E3, we can touch on that. So let's do post E3 last. CW Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths reaction. Thoughts on that? And then we'll do E3 stuff last. Any thoughts on that?
So like I said, like maybe I felt really bubbly because I got a good cry in.
Yeah.
The last several episodes I talked about, I've been really diving into the CW Arrowverse and watching that in order, in the totality of it.
Now, what does that include for those who don't know? What shows does that include and how do they converge?
Right now, that includes Arrow, The Flash, Batwoman, Legends of Tomorrow, Black Lightning. I think some of the Ray that's also in there at the moment.
When you say catching up, is that one episode or one to four episodes that just launched in 2021 or 2020? Like, how do they do that? The conversion? Mm-hmm. Like, because I know sometimes the shows interconnect with the different heroes show up and the stuff. Like,
so every year they do crossovers.
Right.
So they meet up and like all of the shows that are at that moment get put into it, or they have like a single story arc that they go over, whether it be like 3 episodes, 4 episodes, the Crisis on Infinite Earths, it's 5/6.
And it happened this year already? That's what you're watching now?
Last year, I believe. So I'm getting into the 2020 stuff. Let me go and look at my app, because like I said, I've been using this Arrowverse app.
Gotcha.
So beginning of last year, actually. So the Crisis on Infinite Earths actually aired starting December 8th of 2019. And it went across, it was all of the TV shows. So it started off with Supergirl. That was December 8th. Then it was Batwoman on December 9th. Black Lightning didn't necessarily tie into it, but I did at the same time, not as much as the other shows did. And then it ended with Crisis on Infinite Earths. No, it went to The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow, where it kind of wrapped up the last 2 hours of it in 2020. So January of 2020. So that's where I'm at in the series right now. Mind you, what's currently available for free streaming, whether it be on HBO or Netflix, it only goes up to, it ends June of 2020. And there's 600 episodes. So I want to say I'm around at 560 episodes watched so far.
Wow.
But yeah, I was really excited and amazing. Like I don't know how I got through like all of these whatever amount of years from the very first episode of Arrow to not really be spoiled. I mean, when they first originally came out, specifically for Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow. So Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow, I did watch the first season while it was live and it was current in that moment. Arrow, I think I watched up to season 3, and then Flash, I think it was season 2. Somewhere around there. When it was actually in that year when it came out. And then I stopped because it got really overwhelming to be able to, like, I need to be here on Monday, here on Tuesday, here on Thursday.
Yeah.
My DVR is piling up, so I just stopped. And so grateful for Netflix and HBO, because Batwoman I have to watch on HBO Max at the moment because it's not currently on Netflix. Stargirl gets added on later on, and that currently is only on HBO at the moment as well too. But yeah, I've been super excited about the build-up story of Crisis, because like I said, they have like a yearly crossover event. And it's funny because it's kind of like they know they have these crossovers. They can, like, as you watch it, Legends, I think on the first crossover they had, they were kind of a part of it and they were like all of it. And then as it went on, less of the members of the cast of Legends of Tomorrow were incorporated into it. And then there was 1 year where they just were not in the crossover whatsoever. But while you're watching the show, they'll be like, oh, this is what happens because we miss a crossover. Oh, they must be doing their yearly crossover event thing. Like, they make jokes about it, which I absolutely kind of grown to love. And even when I think of the season where they were dealing with you know, fantasy creatures. They made a joke of like, everybody loves fantasy, you know, it's good for the ratings. So they know they're a show, but they don't know our show. Kind of like this weird fourth wall thing that they're breaking, but not. So when it came to the crisis thing, I know I had to sit aside for 6 hours and I had the entire day to myself yesterday. I did not think I was going to be such a crying mess. Like I was, it was really good though. It was really good. I didn't get spoiled about any of it. The story arc is actually a pretty big thing in, you know, the comic books. So to incorporate that into this TV show and this huge crossover, I'm not going to lie. I kind of actually enjoyed it more than Endgame and more than the Snyder Cut of Justice League. I'm just going to say that.
So this, you said 6 hours. So this is 6 episodes back to back?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
You know what you're saying could be considered blasphemy, right? To some degree. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
But I think because I've always liked DC more, they really, really showed how the CW verse of the DC world is actually tied into the big picture of the DC universe of like all the movies that are out there. They even showed scenes from, you know, early on, like, yeah, I can't remember the actor's name, but, he played Robin with, Adam West in that iteration of Batman. They even paid respects to Huntress from, Birds of Prey, which like that TV series only got one season. They even included some screenshots from, you know, towards the ending of it, they showed screenshots about, you know, upcoming shows that have never actually been mentioned or tied into the series. Like you had Stargirl, you had, the Titans, you had Swamp Thing, which right now the Titans and Swamp is only on DC itself, on their network. It's not shown on other things.
So the streaming service.
DC Online. You're not going to watch those shows, but they all have their own worlds that tie into this. And it's all this big picture. You had Ezra Miller, the Flash, show up with Grant Gustin's Flash on their thing. And they interacted. So, you know, they're part of the world. And there's different elements to this that it's just they're in their own world. They're on their own multiverse, but they're all in the same. And it's just like for that, like, I don't know why that hit me, but I just started to cry. And I was like, they're all together in the same multiverse together. So they could meet because I have my two favorite Flashes together, which technically is three. Because John Wesley's ship, which was the original Barry Allen from the 90s Flash, who came back as Henry Allen, which is Barry Allen's dad, and he had several other roles in this Flash version. But there's a part in there where, you know, he's taking the place of the Flash. I can call the Flash so many different things right now. Because he's playing Barry Allen of a Flash of another world compared to the Barry Allen of the current world that is the prime Earth. And he takes his place. But the scene that I was talking to somebody online that really hit me the most was he's sacrificing his life. So John Wesley's ship is sacrificing his life to help this greater good, to save, you know, the multiverse. And they showed him, like, you know, thinking back on his life. And they're actually, like, I'm, like, tearing up even thinking about it. But they show a couple of screen caps and a scene from his Flash from the 90s. And him thinking back on it. And I love that series. That series was really a hot mess. If you go back and watch it right now and what they turned that Flash into, as a kid, I loved it because it's another superhero that exists in this world with Batman. And I love the Batman animated series. And so you have this live action Flash. Like, that was amazing to me. And then you also had Tim Burton's Batman that was going on. So that was huge to me. But like, I always felt like I was like that one kid that just, like, there was a Flash live action Flash TV series. And a lot of people like my age don't really realize that there was. So to show that and to pay respect to it, I was like, I just started to cry. And I remember every single time I started bawling up and just like ready to cry, I'm like, what is wrong with me? But there was such good moments in it. And then to see them all come together. So you're watching these shows separately, but together at the same time. And one part of the DC universe that I really don't know much about, but I'm glad that I got to get into, but I'm also really disappointed because it's canceled, is Black Lightning. And I have really, really grown attached to that show. And previous to this crossover, Black Lightning was never, ever mentioned in any of the previous story arcs. It wasn't mentioned in any of the series whatsoever. So it was like he wasn't a part of it. But then when they brought him in, which is really weird because it's 6 hours as you're watching. Black Lightning falls in between the shows, but it wasn't labeled. The episode name wasn't labeled as Crisis. And I just didn't think, I'm like, well, that's really weird. Like, why would you, like, you know, this series in there, and supposedly according to universe, they have some ties. But the fact that when he showed up on that screen, I just cried there too. Because you're like, you have these fantastic shows, but the diversity in it and is severely lacking. I'm sorry, it's just a bunch of white people in superhero costumes, if you really want to put it that way. There's hardly any Asians. Obviously, I think John Diggle is one black man, and then I think that might be all. So you have, you know, this gorgeous black man, Jefferson Pierce, Black Lightning, and his superhero family, even though it didn't bring his entire family, it was just him, to be in there, added this entire different level of complexity to the story. And I so wish that he was in it more. I feel like they could have done more for him. And the fact that they're finally bringing him into this and to have the show canceled, I'm like, how can you do this to him? How can you do this to the black community who has this dope ass black superhero? Like, John Diggle is cool, but he doesn't have superpowers. He's just really good with a gun. Do you have his I'm just glad that they gave him recognition in it.
That show was kind of boring for me. I watched a little bit of it. I was bored.
Really? Of Black Lightning?
Yeah, I couldn't get into it. Personally.
It's better. It does. I know. Nobody likes to hear that. I think the first half of the first season was a little bit like, this is a little bit dry, but it really grew on me. I liked it. And the thing is why it took me a little bit is when you compare the other TV shows to Black Lightning, even the mood of it is so different. It's like you have these happy, cheery-go-lucky white folks who live in great, rich suburbia over here. And then you have Black Lightning, who is trying to be successful, doing the right thing for Freeland and the black community, and trying to raise, you know, these awesome, smart, supported kids in Freeland. It's very different.
And Freeland?
Yeah, that's the city that they live in, is Freeland.
They live in Freeland. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I didn't.
But
okay.
Black Lightning definitely has the better soundtrack into it. It's just that it's two different types. It's kind of like, here's your white folk neighborhood, here's your black folk neighborhood. Then we're just going to combine them. It's like there's no mesh in between.
Wow.
So that was like, that was what got me like a little bit different, is that you're in the same universe, but yeah, obviously aren't on the same side of the tracks.
Hmm.
But it's a, I think there's only one actor in there that I really don't, in Black Lightning, that I don't really care for. I think it's more his voice. He plays a character named Gambi. It's super weird to me compared to everybody else. But like the, every time that you had this scene of them all working together or something intense going on, I was just crying. And it wasn't sadness. It was just this excitement and joy and just to see all of this going on and to feel like a little kid again. I think so. Part of my crying too was just a weird way of me translating how excited I would be as a kid. Cause even watching those things together, like, and just being excited, like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, even though it was probably one of the worst Batman films, but to see Batman, Robin, and Batgirl, or Batwoman and Batman and everything together, and they're like running down in the capes, and like that was like super exciting, super cool to me, and I loved it. And like that was kind of the same feeling. It's just that childhood feelings and awe and amazement and excitement to see these superheroes coming together across the world. And just the way that it ended, and that's, I think that's also what made me really mad. The way that it ended is, you know, they showed kind of like the Justice League kind of being formed, and they had the round table, and Black Lightning had a place at that table, and I'm watching it thinking, his next season is canceled. It's his last season. How dare you? If you're going to give him a seat at the table, make sure it lasts. That's where I'm at with that one.
So what, they gave him 2 seasons?
4.
Oh, he got 4. I thought it was, okay.
4 seasons. So the last season, his 4th season, just went live on Netflix. I'm not there yet. I'm still in season 3. So yeah, that's what they gave him. I'm like, he got his first crossover with the rest of the team. And okay, so with Crisis on Infinite Earths, basically what it is, you have the antimatter coming in to destroy all of the universes, all of them, all of the Earth, everything like that. So you have the superheroes from all these different Earths. So the only superheroes that live on the same Earth in the beginning, before all this happened, was Arrow, Flash, and Batwoman. They're the only ones that lived within that same Earth. Supergirl was a different Earth. Black Lightning was a different Earth. Black Siren / Canary, she was a different Earth. There's a few that were on the different Earths. Even, okay, so Superman, so Brandon Routh, who played one of the Supermen at one point, I don't think he was a very popular Superman. The actor is actually on Legends of Tomorrow, who plays Ray Palmer. They even paid tribute to him playing Superman, who's from Earth 96. So he got to play 2 characters at once. And they even had Smallville Superman, who was also, they also pay tribute to them. But anyways, they're on these different artists, and you have these guys coming in trying to take over and destroy all of it so that they can make an antimatter universe in their own image. And so all the superheroes are trying to prevent that from happening. They were able to, they couldn't save everyone, but they were able to reboot the universe, which is what is kind of common in comic books in general. Somehow it just gets rebooted and everybody starts all over again, which is what happened. So it rebooted the universe, and a lot of them now are on the same Earth. If not all of them, they're kind of like all there now, so that they can fly over to one another from Central City, Starling City, Gotham, Freeland. They're all there together, that they can just fly over and help each other out now. Instead of like, let's teleport to Earth 2, Earth 3, Earth X, and help each other out. So So I thought that was like, that's awesome. Now you guys are all together. And then that made me cry. I don't know what was wrong or what was in the tea I was drinking, but I was just this hormonal wreck because like when Supergirl and Flash realized that they're on the Earth together, she was excited. And then like found out like, oh my goodness, Batwoman's here too. And I was like, I'm so happy for you because you guys are building a friendship.
That's awesome.
And it was a huge thing. So any show, any universe, any crossovers that have ever happened, hands down, Crisis on Infinite Earth is my favorite. If there's anything you can have to watch, it is those 6 hours of those specific 6 episodes. And I think it's perfectly fine for you to not have watched all the previous seasons before that.
Is it one movie or is it separate things? There's six pieces. Okay.
So if you ever sit down to watch those specific ones, say yes. You should definitely go and do that. It's worth it. I loved it. I think I want to watch it again because it was just so I was just so touched by it, and it was exciting and fun and funny and just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's
That's how I spent my Father's Day.
I mean, I hear it's great. I know my wife, she definitely enjoys that universe. So I know that there's a lot of good stuff that happens there. But I would definitely watch that crossover because I would love to see that. That sounds dope.
There's a lot going on, and then I was tweeting about it, and then like I was saying, John Wesley Shipp liked and responded to my tweet. Like that me and my friend were having a conversation on, and I DM'd my friend, like, oh my god, the Flash responded to us, stay cool, I don't know what to say, but I'm not gonna say anything, I'm just gonna like it. We're gonna play it cool.
You gotta play it cool. Now that's dope. And that's 2020, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I may have to look for that, see what's up with that. Dope. CW Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths. That was dope. Thank you for that. Last but not least, post E3. We are getting into the summer right now, right? I think 6/21 is the first day of summer, right? 6/20 or 6/21? At least I think is one of them. So we're there now.
There.
Hmm.
We're definitely there. I can definitely feel that summer heat already. Probably not as bad as some people are who are having to go through rowing blackouts and whatnot.
So what's your E3 playlist looks like as you wrap up? What's on your jam? Even if it's already out, like what do you think you're going to be playing between now and August?
Scarlet Nexus, 12 minutes. No, there's one more game in there. I forgot about it already. It'll come back to me. But those two, definitely.
Yeah, so I definitely have Halo on the list, Forza Horizon, and some Destiny here and there. And I may jump back into Streets of Rage. May play a little bit of that. Get back into that.
I'm still trying to fit some time in. I know for this next July, I'm pretty busy with work itself. And then it's going to be the last month that my best friend will be here visiting. So I know I'm going to be kind of shifting in there. We do play a lot of games together, but it's a lot more tabletop board games rather than it is video games. So I'm probably going to be playing more board games, to be honest. And I probably won't have as much time available to me. August. I do know I want to jump back and return to Assassin's Creed Valhalla. They have some really amazing content that I've missed, and they have some DLC that's coming out. I still need to finish it. The game is amazing, and so much the story is so great, the action's great. I even love the side quests, so that's something I want to get back into to finish. You still haven't finished It Takes Two, and the thing is that game is not that long, but it's still fantastic. That's how busy I have been. To kill time though, as I have it, if I have like 5 minutes here or there, or maybe even 15 minutes. I've been playing Katamari Damacy on my Switch, which is a very easy way to kill like 10, 20 minutes if I have the time. I don't have to like sit stationary. But I think August is going to possibly be my next time where I can really sit and focus on a game.
Yeah, so I mean, definitely.
Like sit there.
Yeah, definitely keep me posted on that, you know, in terms of especially your time with family. We'll navigate around that so we can still get an opportunity to chat about different things as that's happening. But yeah, it seems like it's going to get to a spot where the summer is going to be a little quiet, right? And then somewhere between 4th of July and then mid-July, we'll probably get a little bit more activity leading into Gamescom in August. And then from there, you know, back to school for whoever, you know, that season leading into September for the games at the top of September for new seasons. Like Destiny typically drops new season at the top of September. Maybe that'll adjust heading into the fall. But yeah, that's all I got. That's all I got. I'm excited for just gaming in general. There's a lot of good stuff happening. And one of the things that we kind of briefly skipped, if you will, I definitely want to mention it real quick. Microsoft is using or will be using xCloud to bring 2022 exclusives to Xbox One. So I wanted to mention that. We also talked about the PS5 beta already. So yeah, so exciting times. Exciting times. And we talked about Nintendo last episode. That was 588. So definitely check that out for the Nintendo stuff that we covered there. Any final thoughts?
Just going on the summer thing, I think I'm excited to get to the point where we can slowly start doing more outdoor activities. And not even just events, just doing stuff outside. I think that's what I enjoyed about my Saturday. A Saturday, we went to a drive-in, but not drive-in movie, which is my first movie outside of my home in a long time. It's a free event. You go to the parking lot. You're supposed to park every other. And in theory, for a drive-in movie, you should stay in your car. But the parking stalls that are empty, since it's every other, people set up, you know, seats and their snacks and everything like that. We had like 4 hammocks, 6 chairs, all sprawled out. Food, snacks, but there's still the social distancing, because for the next party there's still a whole car in between us. But that was nice. It was just free. I mean, I think we watched Harry Potter this last Saturday. This Saturday, which I'm trying to convince people that they want to go to, they got Cool Runnings. Come on. The Jamaican bobsled team. You have to go and watch it. It's just a classic, and you have to. So, hoping. If not, I guess I'm going to be sitting there by myself.
Nah, that's
that's what I'm looking forward to.
That's dope.
Into the summer, definitely.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good. Things are changing, and I definitely agree. Things seems like they're opening back up and stuff like that. So that's pretty dope. That's pretty dope. All right, 589, Daniela, 589. Wow, what a journey. So a couple of things that I want to mention, guys. Make sure you are being safe out there. I definitely want to share that. Support content creators that give you good content. However you're defining good, that could be subjective, right? But support. And definitely you could find me at Uriah, U-R-I-Y-Y-A. Daniela, where can they find you?
You can find me on social media, twitter.com/MissDJM. And yeah, for right now, I don't have a regular streaming schedule, but when I do, I'll be sharing that too. And if I share it, it'll be on Twitter.
Awesome. Until then.
Laters.